Hello and welcome back to Planet Waves FM's continuing coverage of the United Astrology Conference in New Orleans, Louisiana. My name is Eric Francis. It is Saturday, May 26th, the third official day of the conference, or is it the second day? It was a lot of pre-conference foreplay prior to the conference beginning, but I guess the conference actually started yesterday, and now it's going strong, and dozens of classes and people showing up and wandering cluelessly around the hotel lobby. I'm here with Dale O'Brien, my first guest for the day. Welcome to Planet Waves FM, Dale.
Thanks, Eric. Glad to be here.
Dale is an old friend and a contributor to Planet Waves and someone I've just been, I don't know when I got to meet you, like around 96 or 97 or something like that?
In this lifetime.
In this lifetime, or early on. And I was drawn to Dale's work because Dale is one of the Chiron pioneers. I've just fact-checked that with Zane Stein, who said that you were around in the first group of people who were, like, mailing each other postcards and talking about your experiences of Chiron and trying to figure out what this thing was way back at the beginning.
Yes.
And this is going to be, like, around 1980, 1981.
At least.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it couldn't have been before 77.
No, it might have been as early as 80.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, welcome to Planet Waves FM.
Yeah, glad to be here.
And so you were, just before we came on the air, you were talking about the connection between the myth of Capricorn and Pisces, and how those are now joined together by some new planetary transits. And you were saying that you thought that you have found that the mythology of the signs is the oldest mythology, and I agree, those really are the foggy ruins of time. They're the kind of strangest and most fragmented but still legible myths that we have, and they predate astrology going back forever.
Exactly. I mean, what's really interesting with your work, Eric, for instance, is when there are new discoveries in the sky, the mythic names connecting the mythic stories to those planets that have been newly discovered, it's really important to go back to find out who they are rather than to just say, well, this planet was discovered around this time, and around this time this bit of trivia was happening in the modern world, and to say, therefore, that bit of trivia is relevant to that. But the story goes way back, and it's pre-verbal. There's a one of the images that I'll be sharing on Sunday at 4:30 here at the conference will be the image of Pisces, the oldest image of Pisces, older than any known astrology book. And so the myth is older than any of the books, any of the theories, any
of
the stories.
I think it's way old, like the Great Sphinx, old, like that kind of the original older fables back in the day.
Older than the Great Sphinx.
Older than the Great, that's pretty old.
Yes.
Because the Great Sphinx is like 10, 15, whatever, 1,000 years old.
Right, because...
Are these Atlantean? I mean, where do these come from?
Exactly. Exactly. This is my observation. The common myth of the sea goat and the two fishes connected by the common cord that are swimming in different directions, not necessarily opposite directions. In the constellation, are actually going in different directions, the same angle as the convergence and separation of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. Exact same angle. The mythic story is this, that there were gods and then there were other gods. And the gods that were known as the Titans came first. Now, these gods included Cronos, what modern astrologers would call Saturn, and the Romans called Saturn, and Prometheus, that modern astrologers have connected to the planet Uranus, Uranus, whatever you want to call that guy. Mm-hmm. And they are not at all compatible with the Hellenistic or Olympian gods. I'm sorry, I said Hellenistic, but I really should say Olympian gods, which would be Zeus and Venus and company. So what happened in the myth is both types are always trying to put the other one down, and not just literally put them down the way we use that in the vernacular, but actually to force the former gods back down into the earth. and put them underground. So that expression, putting somebody down, that's what it's about. It's about
to put them underground.
It's about burying them.
To bury them.
To bury them. And yet, they keep coming back. And they're back.
In the form of transits now.
In the form of transits connected to the myth. And who came back is the biggest, baddest titan that has ever been known. So bad that not only does it scare people, it scares the gods.
Who will that be? Neptune?
This is Typhon, also known as Typhos. So forget about the mythic patches on their sleeves. Mythic experts that will tell you, well, Typhon doesn't have anything to do with typhoons, and typhus doesn't have anything to do with diseases. In the mythic imagination, if we hear something and it reminds us of something else, then of course it has something to do with that. And so this creature comes up and is so tall that his head goes into the stars. His wingspread, or sometimes its arm spread, because the myth can change a little bit, but the more important thing is the overall story. When he stretches his wings or arms, it's so wide it blocks the sun. Instead of legs, it has enormous, powerful serpents that constrict someone like the ultimate boa constrictor. Breathes fire. Sometimes has an enormous amount of red eyes in the head, or sometimes actually on the fingertips, there are red eyes.
Like a gigantic Balrog.
Could be. And, of course, we come forward, and this is the, you know, the all-seeing eye of the modern collective. You know, what the Rastafarians would call Babylon mind. We in this era now. And this was so freaky that the gods and the goddesses, except Venus and Eros, they all ran like hell to Egypt. So they left Olympus. They abandoned their, you know, their high ground, and they changed themselves into forms that we wouldn't recognize. And Zeus actually became torn apart in the battle.
Who was the battle with Typhon?
You're
saying that the Olympian gods and goddesses went to war with Typhon?
No, they didn't go to war because they were scared to hell. They ran like hell.
They fled.
They fled.
But how does it get torn up if they don't have a fight?
He is pursued, and he's torn up. And the thing about
Typhon, I somehow totally missed the story.
And see, this is why I want to share this story, because most people don't know the story because they didn't go looking for it. And the thing about myth is sometimes you'll go, no, it happened when they were battling. Okay, maybe it happened when they were battling. Maybe it's like he fled and then was grabbed. But he's torn apart. And then Athena says, guy, you got to get it together. You know, you can't just take this. You got to go and deal with this guy and fight him. And fight him he does. And in their fight, we have the ultimate environmental destruction in every form. Zeus, of course, throws lightning bolts. Typhon, at one point, steals the lightning bolts and is throwing them back. So he's actually becomes disempowered, both, you know, losing his limbs and all this. And in shamanism, of course, there's a whole thing about being torn apart and then being put back together. So we've got this, you know, incredible battle going on, and there are earthquakes, and there are tidal waves, and it's just basic havoc, basic environmental havoc that is the gods are fighting with each other. But if two exceptions, and this is where the story, the most important part of the story is. But before I move into those two exceptions, which are Venus and Eros, her son, there's also the Capricorn connection. How the sea goat became a sea goat is the god Pan, the god of nature, was also freaked out by this whole process. And he changed himself partially into a fish. And the general story with this, and again, there's always variations, but the general story with this is he didn't quite get it right. He was still somewhat Pan, so not fully disguised as fish, and he certainly wasn't his old former. He hadn't become a full-fledged fish, so he's in this sort of in-between state, the sea goat. So we have Pluto and Capricorn for that part, but the Pisces part of this is that Venus and her beloved son Eros are hanging out next to the river, and they. They're either walking through the woods adjacent to the river, or they're sunbathing or otherwise kind of partying down. Venus is good at that. And they see and sense that he's coming up, and he actually comes up from the water. And what do they do? She quickly makes a cord and ties the cord to her foot and to the foot of her son, Eros. And they dive into the water. They dive into the turbulent waters.
And she's a water goddess, and so she's got an affinity for water. She was born in the sea.
Well, yes, and because of this, there's, again, this connection of, in some ways, she's going back to her origin, to the sea. And also, we can say that in some versions of the story, we could say she's born or reborn from the earth after this whole incredible episode is over with. And so they're swimming in the turbulence, separated by circumstances, but always connected by the common cord. We have the goddess of love and the bringer of love, Eros. So what is the common cord? It's the bond of love. Very important in terms of the era that we're going into. There's different ways in which the story ends, and myths are like dreams. They don't have the kind of the logic of even a bad Hollywood movie, in terms of like, well, why did that save the day? Somehow the diving into the water saves the day.
Bonded. They're bonded and they dive into the water.
They dive into the water bonded, and they change themselves into either fish or dolphins. Dolphins are, of course, fish-like beings. And then one story is that they go ashore and they come up out of the water as fish coming to shore. Or there's another story in which two fish come and rescue the two of them and bring them to shore. And somehow that is the end of the whole problem. Not so much that force versus force is going to solve everything, but it's all about the power of love and diving in. And what I find interesting about this is...
And they snag Typhon this way.
No, they don't need to. They just like these crazy... These crazy guys are fighting again, and it's like, let's just dive into the water. There's nothing about fighting, the ultimate, yet another battle with the Titans, battle of the Titans. No. It's all about love. It's like, heck with this stuff.
And that in the myth is what resolves the myth, is that Venus and Eros tie themselves together kind of a Piscean way. And they dive into the water. And are you saying that those two fish, one is Venus and one is Eros?
Yes.
In Pisces. And
they're, right.
And they're a kind of a residue of this old myth.
Well,
they're
the timeless story. In other words, with myth, it's like it always was, it always is, it always will be. And so, yes, this is what saves everything is love. Mm-hmm. And everything which is Venus. And one of the things about this, to bring this forward in terms of, what's in it for me and my sun sign, every Pisces, anybody who has any placement in Pisces, if they're really, really Pisces, they're all about love. They're all about everything that Venus is. And in astrology, there's, people just learn little keynotes, and the keynote is Venus is exalted in Pisces. It's like, what the hell does that mean? Go back to the myth. You know why this is this. Because this is where she belongs, and this is where she, with her son, saves the day. So what's going to save us as we are now already started into, because Pluto's already in Capricorn, Chiron's already in Pisces, Neptune's already in Pisces, what's going to save us from the very viable environmental havoc and other forms of chaos related to the fact that we take the environment for granted? And our civilization is all based on this. The only thing that's going to save it is all things Venus. And that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. I use the sneaking expression for the title of my story, What the World Needs Now. And I planted that because a long ago story from 1965, there was a pop song called What the World Needs Now is Love. and
by Burt Bacharach
and Hal David, yeah. And sung by Jackie DeShannon, and
not Dionne Warwick.
Dionne did it. She did it second, and also it was a hit by at least the two of them, maybe other people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what is coming back now. And so I've also looked into what was going on when Chiron was in Pisces before, not just the last time of 1960 to 1968, but before that.
So what was going on in the early 20th century Chiron in Pisces?
It was World War I, going back to approximately that time, and after World War I, when there was a tremendous influenza that killed hundreds of thousands of people, like 650,000 people in the United States alone, and it took out primarily people who were 20 to about 50 years old.
Yeah, people in the prime of life.
In the prime of life.
And they could be dead in 24 hours.
Exactly. And very, very different, of course, from most epidemics, which usually take out the vulnerable, the young, and the elderly. This one was very different. So again, we have the myth of typhoon or typhus, and we have a disease. So there's this potential also for that kind of instability and challenges to come into the collective.
What's indicating the possibility of those kind of pandemics?
That there's a lot of tragedy that's mm-hmm. associated with this myth. In other words, awful things.
You mean all typhons, just all the destruction from the struggle between them and between Zeus and Typhon and
exactly. So, in other words, this is not business as usual. It's not there anymore. It's not there anymore. And just because, well, today there isn't anything happening. We're here in New Orleans, and this conference ends at the end of May. June is the official beginning of the hurricane season. We're just 7 years past Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
We're just memory at this, but we're not that far past the Deepwater Horizon explosion.
That was in 2010. That was just 2 years ago.
Thank you, because I was going to say 11, but it was, of course, the 2010. And these recent memories, which were also connected to the timing of Chiron, Neptune, Pisces, and Fukushima also happening during the same time. If you notice all this, common theme is water, the hubris of man, which is associated with the Promethean Titan, or what we would call Uranus. And so we have, pardon the cliche, but the perfect storm happening right now.
And you're seeing that the combination of transits is, we've got these new planets in Pisces over the past couple of years have come in. And then you're associating this with Pluto and Capricorn, and there's going to be a pickup on how the goat gets a tail in Capricorn. What the hell is a sea goat? I had my own theory, but I think you'll have a different one.
Well, I no offense to you, Eric. I love your work, as you know. But I will take mythology over anybody's theory.
No, it's
day.
A mythological theory.
If it's a mythological theory, I'm all ears.
Well, because Eridanus is up there, and the fish are up there, and the water bearer is up there standing
yes.
in the Nile River.
Yes.
And or the Eridanus, depending on which river you think it is.
Yes.
And there's a sea monster up there, too.
Yes.
I forget his name. Cetus, is that right?
Cetus is a whale in some versions, but also, yes.
Okay, so there's a whole aquatic part of the
exactly.
part of the sky up there.
It
and there's
aquatic.
Rivers and nails.
Ah, well said.
Okay, and so if you're going to have a goat, it would be mean to have him not have a tail. He's got to swim.
Right, because Capricorn is practical and adapts to everything. And, if Capricorn finds itself in water, wouldn't it be practical to adapt? And,
of course he has to have a tail. And
right.
So they knew that.
Right.
So the myth makers saw him with a tail, or it just
right.
emerged that way
in other
from,
words,
the, from the waters
if,
of the unconscious.
In other words, if Capricorn was going to go diving, he might just put on some scuba
flippers.
Gear,
exactly.
Yeah.
So is that really what happened? Is that how he got
well,
the tail?
Well, we don't know, because in one version, it's basically Capricorn is accused of being inadequate at the try to adapt to the circumstance. In other words, he didn't quite get it right because he didn't go to become entirely aquatic. But maybe not. I mean, my anyone who criticizes the myth and basically finds inadequacy, I'm reluctant to believe that, and more feel like he probably did exactly what was right, and basically this way he would be amphibian, and be able to use his four legs to drag himself over the sea. Out of the sea and up the earth. When the circumstances would allow, and could use his or her tail in the water. So it seems like that was just the right way for Capricorn to adapt to the circumstances.
Right. But it's also centaurish. There's the implication of a hybrid of some kind.
Yes.
So whatever the hybrid is of, there's the implication of that, and then there's also the implication of transition.
Right.
With the part sea, part land creature.
Exactly.
There's an image of evolution there.
Yes.
And that a suggestion that things can go back and forth between them.
Yes, and
I mean, there's
you.
A whole conversation about the dolphins that we didn't start in the water and come crawling up on land, but rather we start on land and then some of us, namely the dolphins, take to the sea because it's calmer down there and there's less going on.
Exactly. And so in other words, getting away from the linear of did we start here and go back, or do we start there and go forward?
I mean, I was proposing an alternative.
Exactly.
There's a standard narrative that, you know, a fish crawls up on the beach one
right.
day in Africa and starts banging on a drum.
Right. And I'm agreeing with you completely, is that there's a linear assumption to that we moderns are better. We came from a point in the past that was bad, and now we're getting better, and the more we go into the future, the better and better everything will be. And your idea is completely the same as mine in that, no, it's a cycle. Astrology is all about cycles. And it's sort of like, well, did we start here or go there? It's like, you know, it's a timeless cycle going from one to the other. I did want to say something else about these time periods of when Chiron was in Pisces, to pick just two that I know of. The 1960 to 1968 period, which I'd like to say more about if there's a moment, is that in 1960 and 1968 and during World War I, these were the first wars where a lot of people, a significant minority of people, did not go to war.
And I mean, of the eligible people.
Of the eligible people.
World War I was one of those
yes.
wars where it was a selective kind of a situation?
Right. And World War I, like Vietnam, was particularly a war that was sold through propaganda. The story is that the New York banks, the Wall Street banks, had invested in the British and French. And if the British and French had lost the war, then they would lose their money. So they had to get the Americans into the war to make sure that they would win. Because the American people, up until this point, America didn't go to war.
No, there was a whole thing about foreign intervention and
exactly.
not wanting to mind the business of other countries that used to be at the very heart of American conservatism.
Exactly.
An isolationist concept.
And
the smallest things that were considered interventionist were frowned upon.
Right.
Little skirmishes and things like that.
Exactly. And if the United States took imperialistic actions, that was more taken in stride. But the whole idea of going and getting involved in a conflict that someone else had started, there was a strong resistance in both World War I and in Vietnam. There was a huge amount of, we're not going to go. And if you think about it, what is not going to war? It's to be Venus. I would much rather do all kinds of fun Venus things than to go off and kill a bunch of people.
Well, that was the story of the people who stayed home in the 60s.
It exactly.
was lots of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah, and let's talk about the 60s. A lot of astrologers, very well-meaning at the time, knew that this was an amazing decade. But they didn't know about Chiron, because, as you know, Chiron wasn't even
officially discovered until 77.
And we didn't have an ephemeris for Chiron until about a year later, late 78. So we didn't even know that, you know, most astrologers didn't even know that there was an object out there. Even the Vanguard didn't know until about 79. And yet, here's the mythic story, because I love myth, and again, I'm you know, distrustful of people that just put modern stereotypes onto things. Mythically, Chiron played a musical instrument called a kithara. It was a stringed instrument, and derivatively from kithara became...
Family. Friendship.
Oh, okay. But this
well, doesn't the word kith mean friendship?
Well,
kin means family, and
okay. Well, I'm okay, open. I'm open ahead. To this. This is all new, good, and wonderful.
Okay. What's your take?
The part is that the stringed instrument, the kithara, became the gittara, which became the guitar. And Chiron had an ability to play music that not only did all humans and living creatures here, but the animals, the plants, and get this, the rocks themselves listened in enchantment to the music that he played. So Chiron actually was a guitar player who played the first rock music. Okay.
Ah, so the pickup here is that the 60s, I think we think of as being an era in musical history. I think that's the primary association most people have with the 60s. More, maybe up there with Vietnam, but we think of the music, really. We think the 60s is a soundtrack.
Right, and particularly the music of the 60s, not, you know, not the Green Berets, you know, it's that one-hit wonder, but most of the music of the 60s was about love and, in a larger sense, about not going to war. War, what is it good for?
Who was that?
Edwin Starr. Absolutely nothing, he said, but I think it actually is absolutely profits, was the real story. And so we're in an era where, yes, we have the probability of high crises coming back again, but probably more pronounced, because the last times that we had Chiron or Neptune in Pisces, this time we get Chiron and Neptune, and at no additional charge, Pluto and Capricorn, all connected to the same myth. So to me, this is the biggest time in known human memory, and there's, you know, a great importance to realize that we cannot take the environment for granted, and that the Titanic, Promethean, Uranian impulses out of power, taking a sense in which technological man, can do a better job handling things than the creator and the environment that we were born into. All of those things are on the table for an opportunity to see what the collective is going to do with this. And one thing about Chiron is he grew up in nature. He was connected to nature. So
and he's got 4 feet, so he's
very well
connected
grounded
to the earth.
Very well grounded. Thank you. Yes. And so, what I'm encouraging people as much as they can, and you know, everybody's different, but is to try and reconnect to nature and to try and reconnect to water, as much as possible in this era.
Well, now we have the ultimate Capricorn Pisces form of underground devastation called hydrofracking.
Yes, exactly.
Which has been going on for a while, but it's only starting to, you know, become better known now. What's not just the past couple of years since Gasland came out.
Yes,
and talk about an image of environmental devastation that's below the surface and inducing earthquakes. It's very much in the realm of Neptune.
Yes, exactly. And thank you for that, Eric, because this to me is the environmental sort of double threat. Is the Pluto and Capricorn deals with the as I see it from an environmental point of view, it actually deals with the Earth itself, the fracking issues, and also the leveling of the mountains in places like West Virginia, part of what I'm
to take out coal
to take out coal in that case. And so on the land, we have a significant environmental devastation, but we also have issues involving the water. And when we deal with water, even though in the myth it was the river, Neptune or Poseidon is actually was the lord or god of all the waters. So it includes both salt water and fresh water. Mm-hmm. And so we have the convergence of these, whether we're actually talking about standalone water, seemingly standalone water, or whether, you know, seemingly dry earth. But they can also converge in a situation like the tar sands, for instance, in Canada. Mm-hmm. Because in order to do the extraction, as you well know, there's a significant amount of water that is used, wasted, and made toxic.
Same with fracking. It's like 300 truckloads of water have to be brought in to dug the well.
Exactly, and thank you.
And then it ruins the well.
Right. So part of what this is with this incredible threat to water, to that which is necessary to sustain lives on the planet, and also our brains, by the way. People talk about, well, the body is, predominantly water in composition, but the brain is something like 70% water. So if someone really wants to increase their brain power and their brain savvy, it's really important to drink more water.
And why being dehydrated really can affect your mood.
Exactly.
Because your brain starts to dry out, and
exactly.
It really feels that way.
Exactly.
I guess if you're a Pisces.
Exactly. Well, I think what the Pisces are is they're sort of the maritime canaries. You know, it's like, we Pisces are always in the water. We're always in the swim of things. So the Pisces, particularly the early Pisces, the February Pisces, are in the vanguard. We're already been going through this. And in some ways, a lot of this is the empathetic, when these catastrophes happen to anyone who has planets in Pisces, but particularly the first degrees, there's this incredible compassion, because we are connected by the common core to all the creatures, to all the beings. And when things happen to the sea turtles or happen to the people of Japan and or wherever they are, there's this incredible empathy of feeling what other people are going through that is really pronounced now. And yet what's also opening is that with the attunement to, well, what can we do during this time? How can we be with all these things? And I see Chiron, in a quick soundbite, being connected to the Serenity Prayer, in that with the Serenity Prayer, it's to accept the things we cannot change. Sounds like Saturn to me. Change the things we can, Uranus, Prometheus, and Chiron orbiting right between them.
The wisdom to know the difference.
The difference, and mythically, Chiron was a wisdom figure.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and teacher, and lots of other
and
things,
lots
but really
of other
it, come,
things
it all comes back to
including
ethics.
A hell of a guitar player.
that's really interesting. By the way, I found the etymology on that. Kith and kin are from a different lineage. Guitar, according to Etymology Online, is, which is pretty good, well-sourced etymology dictionary. Guitar, 1620s, ultimately from Greek, kithara, or
yes.
Cithara, C-I-T-H-A-R-A, but that's probably pronounced with a K.
Yes, that's right.
Like Charon, the other moon of the first big co-body of Pluto. A stringed, that's from a different story. So kithara, a stringed musical instrument related to the lyre, perhaps Persian, from sitar, see sitar. The name reached English several times, including an early 14th century guitarne, in reference to various stringed guitar-like instruments. The modern word is directly from Spanish, guitarra from Arabic, kitar from Greek. So this is one that keeps infiltrating
right.
The English language and all these other Indo-European languages. It's sort of swimming around
exactly
back there.
Because Chiron is always around. Chiron's always around. And the interesting thing about a stringed instrument is we're dealing with tension. In order to have a string that will make music, you can't do it with a flaccid chord. And so it's actually playing with the tension is what Chiron does. And playing with it beautifully when the music is played just right.
Mm-hmm. And there's that hand. I mean, most musical instruments are played with hands. So, but it's just one more thing Chiron did with his hand. So that's really interesting. So Hermes learns how to play the lyre. How do you pronounce it? Lyre, L-Y-R-E.
Lyre.
Yeah. On his first day, by noon, I think he's playing the lyre, and by nighttime
exactly.
He's given up that folly for stealing cows.
Yeah.
The prized bulls of Apollo, I guess.
Well,
right.
He has to be mercurial. It's in his nature.
And then he's arguing for his. To have his ass saved the next morning.
Of course. And succeeds.
He gets it and succeeds.
He's good at that.
Yeah, or he threatened to become the the Lord of Felons or something like that. If you don't let me off the hook for this, I'm going to just become the Lord of Felons. And
but,
I think Apollo
course,
threatens to send him down to hell to be the baby demon god.
Yeah, but of course he did become the Lord of Felons too. Something to watch is when Mercury goes retrograde, watch how much sneaky stuff happens.
I found that sneaky stuff comes out. If I'm trying to expose something, I use Mercury stations, and one of my key phrases for Mercury stations is the truth comes out.
Right, and see, this is the whole thing, because it's the atmosphere for the theft is going on. So it's like, when do you catch a thief? When he wants to be active. So it's either the getting away, unless we have somebody like yourself, Eric.
With a criminal mind.
Who can think like Mercury and go, what would the trickster be up to now? Let's see, where's the chart? Tell us where he's at. And then you can get the scoop.
And they seem to reveal themselves. There's kind of like the station, the change in directions seems to open up a little curtain in a way.
I think so. It's kind of like those cop movies where the criminal gives clues to the detective and goes, "Catch me if you can."
Yeah.
Serial
killers love to do that.
Well, yeah, the serial killers do, but I think it might actually be possibly, and see if you find this, you might actually find that this is about all kinds of sneaky activity. It's almost like one part is, I'm so clever, and the other is, catch me if you can.
Well, what good is being clever? There's that ego thing that slips in. What's good is being clever if you can't impress the person who you're trying to outsmart? Because if you get away with the perfect crime, which would be no one knows you committed the crime.
Yes.
That's really the perfect crime.
Yes.
You have to be pretty spiritual for there to be ego gratification in that. You have to be the humble kind of egotistical criminal to not want everyone to know.
Right.
To not have it be in the Gotham City Rag or whatever it's going to be, the New York Post.
Right. Exactly. And to bring this conversation back into the other mythic gods and goddesses that we were talking about, when Mercury moves into the picture, I think there can be an articulation of some of the things that we're talking about here. What are the issues really going on? Specifically, the updated version of this myth for our times. And also some articulation, some significant articulation of how to be with it. Because I think Pisces is basically intuitive unless Mercury comes into the picture to help with the articulation.
Or Chiron, in this case, I think, is bringing Pisces energy a lot more focused and bringing it into a conscious level, whereas it might normally...
Well, I think it's very... I think intuition is incredibly conscious. Intuition is being in the now and just knowing. But the articulation, so that someone like yourself can sort of share the message with other people, can be very, very helpful. Because otherwise, it's sort of like each intuitive is on his or her own out there, which is... that's good, but there is also the wonderful ability to articulate as you do what's going on, and so there's the advantage of when Mercury can say this, because not everybody is as has the initial components in their chart to be well versed to move into this time intuitively. The Pisces do. Those who have trines to these transiting planets or sextiles.
You mean like early fire, early earth, early water?
Well,
are going to be picking up the Uranus-Pluto square by trine?
Well, actually, I was more thinking, obviously that's a whole other story going on is the Uranus-Pluto square. But in terms of this, I was mainly thinking of the sextile aspect between Pluto, Chiron, Neptune. Which is
another transiting. Well, it's transiting yod. This has been the transiting yod's been going on since the 70s or something like that.
Exactly.
That's to say that Pluto and Uranus are at about 60 degrees apart, and they are moving at about the same speed right now. So that this 60 degree angle of two potent outer planets has been influencing everyone, which is another way of saying that when you take a transit from one, you're taking a transit from both.
Yes.
And now Chiron's in the picture. It's adding a third element to the picture.
Yes. And in this picture, in terms of whenever, there was the mythic struggle that was going on, and what did Venus and Eros do? It was like, heck with the mythic struggle, Let's go swimming.
Or let's return to the primordial waters.
Which is one and the same. Because there is this sense of to pursue that which is pleasurable is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And to turn away from that which is destructive, either to be the victim of the destruction or to be a perpetuator of the destruction, seemingly because it's seemingly is necessary. It's like, no, just turn away. Just don't fight.
And so that you're suggesting that's an adequate, that's kind of a actual form of resistance. To war is to seek pleasure and to
actually,
not be.
It's actually more powerful than just resistance. It is the all-conquering force. With the power of love, anything is possible, Jimi Hendrix said. And Jimmy's going to be in my talk, so anybody out there, if they're listening to this or would like to get a copy of it.
What did he have in Pisces?
Jimmy didn't have anything in Pisces, but he wrote a song that was inspired by Edgar Cayce, and he shared this song. He created the song, but it wasn't released until Chiron was recently back into Pisces on the title song of an album called Valleys of Neptune.
Hendrix.
With some powerful lyrics, but we won't go into that. You know, it'll be in my talk and the recording of that. But it's an all convergence. What Edgar Cayce saw about Atlantis, you know, what Hendrix saw in his visions, inspired by Cayce, the mythic story that I'm in, sharing with you here now, they're all converging. Mm-hmm. And I will say to listeners out there, if you're trying to get the lyrics for Valleys of Neptune and you go to ringtones or whatever, there's these abominable, ridiculous, absurd, clumsy lyrics that are out there. They're not accurate. I've got the lyrics, I'll put it on my website. Mm-hmm. And the website is www.chironsouljourneytruth.com.
ChironSoulJourneyTruth.com. Do you still have .chiron.com? Is that going to redirect to?
It's redirect.
All right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there's, you know, there'll be more information on that site.
Awesome. Good.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So thank you, Dale.
Well, thank
you. And thanks
for
all your help on Planet Waves.
Okay.
I really appreciate it.
All right. And keep up your great work.
Excellent.
Okay.
So, continuing coverage from the United Astrology Conference in New Orleans, Louisiana. It is May 26th, a Saturday morning, and we're signing off from this at about 12 minutes past 11. We've got another fun lineup of interviews for you today, and I guess if you're listening to this, the Melanie Reinhardt interview has already gone up, so don't forget to check that one out. That one is a lot of fun. It's also pretty long. It'll keep you busy half the morning if you play the whole thing through. In any event, we'll be back in a little while. My name is Eric Francis, host of Planet Waves FM. Thanks for tuning in.